Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 912. This episode brought to you by Squarespace. Beautiful templates created by world-class designers. Squarespace makes it easy to turn your idea into a new and unique website in just a few Jonas.
Am I a measure of time now?
You're a measure of time, Jonah.
I bet it's a long amount of time.
It's going to be very confusing to people because you're in this intro, but you're not actually in this episode. Squarespace also has analytics that are going to help you grow in real time. If you have a question, they have award-winning 24/7 customer support that's going to help you out. Think it, dream it, make it with Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use the offer code NERDIST. Save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Jonah Ray, do you have anything coming up that you want to promote?
I got nothing. When is this podcast coming out?
What are you, Matt Myra from 2 years ago? It's funny to say that now because he's busier than all of us put together.
True. When is this coming out? Today? Tomorrow? Okay.
Right now.
I'm hosting a benefit for 826 LA.
Oh, that's
which
great.
Which is a nonprofit aimed at doing free creative writing classes for kids. We're doing a half marathon in LA Historic Park. Go to 826LA.com for information on that. It's like a tiny little marathon, but there's like these little things you have to do along the way, like stack a book on your head. Like there's all these little challenges
you gotta
do throughout. And there's going to be food, music, there's beer and stuff like that. It's at LA Historic State Park, and so that would be a lot of fun.
What's the website for it?
826LA.com. I think it's like they have it on their front page there. And then in Los Angeles again, I'm going to be performing on a show with one of my favorite bands, Fart Barf.
Yeah.
Which is a great band. I highly recommend you guys check out Fart Barf.
Fantastic.
You'd like them. Real synthy, cool stuff.
Great.
But then also Harmar Superstar is on the show, and Honus Honus, which is Ryan from Man, and I'll be on that show as well. It's a bunch
fantastic,
of my buddies.
Fantastic, John Ray.
Oh, and then we're reading Plan 9 from Outer Space.
For a guy who didn't have anything to promote.
These are just shows. To announce local things always feels weird, don't you think?
No, not at all. People want to know. Where are you doing the Plan 9 reading?
At Largo. It's Dana Gould, Janet Varney, Ron Lynch, Matt Bronger,
Great. A
bunch of us, Laurie Newman. We've done it a few times. It's a lot of fun.
Great.
And, yeah, I play, the main guy in Plan 9.
So I get to do that voice.
You get to do it's in the back.
It's in the back.
Yeah. Bruce Gutter?
Yeah, I basically do Bruce Gutter.
I love – Bruce Gutter has been absent for a long time.
Yeah, he's in rehab.
Rehab was in the back.
Rehab was in the back. Back Bay. It was up in Bodega Bay. Beautiful this time of year.
Katie, what else have we got from the Nerdist community?
A Cincinnati soup kitchen and food pantry was recently robbed and had computers and bank info stolen from their offices. They serve over 1,600 people every week, so this very much affected them as they have to buy a lot of food. They set up a GoFundMe to help raise money, and any extra money that they raise will go towards buying food. So you can find that at GoFundMe.com/WHKitchen. And then Jordan Anderson writes, I just wrote and self-published my first book on Amazon. It's titled Life After. The best way to find it is to search my name, Jordan Anderson. It's a short novel taking place in a zombie-ridden Northeast Tennessee. And it's available as an ebook for $2.99 and paperback for $9.99.
Fantastic.
Oh, also, I started that other Instagram account for fun, Movie Shite.
Where you go around and just like Bela Lugosi died here.
Yeah. Just like I went to the Michael Myers house and I like old photos I find and this movie Shite was so that's shit with an E.
Yeah, I think people know.
Yeah.
Probably a lot of.
Yeah.
We know the shite.
It's fun.
We know what shite is.
Yeah.
You stupid bastard. We know what shite is. Jonah, this episode is the Duffer Brothers, Matt and Ross.
I'm so bummed I couldn't make this.
They
one.
Were great.
Yeah.
I hammered them a lot about Wayward Pines.
Oh yeah,
it was a great show.
Yeah, I remember you liking
it. It was one
that.
Of those like, I don't think I don't think Fox really expected much from it, so they just like, I just put this out, I guess, and then it was a hit, and they were like, fuck. But by the time they realized that, Matt and Ross were already making Stranger Things.
Man,
but Stranger Things season 2 comes out October 27th, so that's probably at like midnight Pacific time, I imagine.
Probably. So that means there's going to be people that have watched the whole thing and spoiled it by the time we wake up.
By the time you wake up, the whole thing is going to be.
Yeah, exactly.
When does the Demogorgon get to the fireworks factory? This episode also brought to you by Stamps.com. Stamps.com lets you buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer or printer. You just click, you print, you mail, and that's it. And it never closes. Print the letters or packages at your convenience 24/7, and then they're gonna send you a digital scale to calculate the exact postage you need. You're not gonna waste a penny. and they're going to help you decide the best class of mail based on your needs. You're even going to get discounts you can't get at the post office. Suck on that, post office. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Right now, enjoy Stamps.com with a special offer that includes a four-week trial, plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist. That is Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist. Never go to the post office again. Stamps.com. Never go. Here's Nerdist Podcast number 912. With the Duffer Brothers and not Jonah Ray.
Yeah, Duffer Man. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Thursday, the big premiere is Thursday.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah. It's all crazy.
Well, I'm excited because we get to see it on a proper movie screen.
Oh, right.
Which we haven't even done, like, because last year was like they put this projector together. It wasn't like a real movie theater that we got to experience it. And so
what
I'm
was
excited
the,
about
was
that.
The vibe last year? Like, did Netflix say this show's gonna be a hit, or were they like? And we're gonna release this. Good
I
luck.
Think they do it. They treat this like every other show. They just like it's another dart they're throwing.
Right.
You know, they really liked it, but no, I don't think they thought it was gonna.
No,
be
I think the thing
hit.
Is that if they put this stuff out there, if it's you know a lot, you know, can find and hopefully we'll find an audience. They thought it was gonna take a lot longer than it did to find an audience.
Really?
That was the only difference. They said it. They thought word of mouth was gonna get the show a lot of fans. It was just gonna take some time. That's what we were told.
But they were very clear. They were like, "There's not going to be marketing or blah 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 blah."
Well, at least they were honest about it.
Months and months ahead.
But can you?
They'd seen the show.
But can you imagine if they did it for all their shows? I mean, it would only be Netflix marketing everywhere. They have so much content and so many.
I just read like this year it was like they're going to put out 80 movies.
Jesus,
there's going to be one every 4.5 days or something.
Yeah, they did the same thing with with stand up. They did the same thing where it was like, oh, wow, Netflix is a really amazing platform because it's one of the few destination platforms where people will actually go and see a homepage and get recommended. You know, it's like it's just different than the way people normally engage with entertainment. Like those days are over. But Netflix had it. And then they were like, well, now we're going to do one special a week for 52. I was like, oh, that's a lot of specials. I mean, it's great. There's a lot of comedy, but I think it can be a little overwhelming sometimes for people
who are
like, oh, wait, there's like 10 other things just came out. You know, it's stressful.
I remember when season one came out, I didn't even see it as recommended for me on that list, you know, their algorithm. And I'm like, I made this for myself. How can it not be recommended
Netflix
to me?
Netflix is like, you don't like your own work.
I know.
Sorry.
I was like, if I can't find it, how's anyone going to find it? But
they did.
They did. They
well,
did.
Yeah, because it was one of the – oh, actually, look. Someone gave me that VHS box at – see right
oh,
there?
Yeah.
Right
Isn't
next
that
to Java.
Cool? I want them to actually put it out.
It's a Stranger Things VHS box.
To actually put it out on VHS. I said it would have to come with a VCR.
It would have to.
Because people don't, you know, but I think it'd be fun.
I don't know if there's a tape in there or not. Someone gave that to me at Comic-Con last year.
Oh, there's not. Now they actually did put it out. Like they put it out. The Blu-ray box looks like this. The Blu-ray release does look like this.
What's funny to me is that I think I had assumed that you were maybe a generation older than you are, but but it takes place before you were born.
Yeah but we grew up on VHS.
Gotcha.
That was like DVD was like a hard transition for me to make because that was we were in high school.
But that's what's interesting, I think, is that, and maybe part of what led to Stranger Things is that we fell in love with these movies on television screens.
Got it.
I didn't see E.T. theatrical. I mean, I'm bummed that I didn't, but I didn't see that. I didn't see Indiana Jones. I didn't see, you know, the original Star Wars on the big screen.
Right.
I didn't see it theatrically. And so I think that – so when we fell in love with these movies, it was on this tiny box of a TV and just sitting
But it didn't seem to, like, diminish the power of the movies at all.
Sure.
Like, I remember seeing, like, the double VHS Braveheart. I mean, tons of times. But it was like –
it felt huge.
Right,
and
right,
I was watching
right.
on a 10-inch.
Because I can count the movies that like when I was growing up that blew my mind, that made me want to do this. And some of them, like Jurassic Park, I did see on the big screen. But a lot of them, yeah, I remember watching Goodfellas. I rented it from the library, VHS. And it was mind-blowing. It blew my mind.
That's so funny, like, that you can rent Goodfellas on VHS
from the public library.
Wow.
Yeah, for free. Those were the days.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. But when DVDs came out, I was like, I just felt like it didn't matter to me that the image was crisper, because we were watching on really small televisions.
Right.
And then the bar that
I remember,
you know,
watching Last of Mohicans DVD, yeah. And it's like
well, if you're
sliver.
Watching with a 2:35, you know, aspect ratio on a small television, it's worse, frankly, than watching it on VHS.
Can I just backtrack a little bit and ask you some Wayward Pines questions?
Okay. Oh my God. Okay.
Because that was a show that sort of felt like my wife and we were dating at the time when it came out.
Yeah.
Like, Wayward Pines, this looks really interesting, and fell in love with it immediately. Like, oh my God, this is great. But it felt like a limited run. It was like, okay, well, I guess Fox is maybe going to take their hand, like True Detective style. Like, everyone's doing these limited run shows.
Yeah.
They got Matt Dillon. They got, you know, Carla Gugino. They got to assemble this cast. And they do this show. And then they put it out. And they were like, oh, fuck. Yeah. Oh, shit. People, we got to do something. I don't know if we were prepared for this.
Yeah, no. I don't. Well, that was a weird experience. Stranger Things would not exist were not for Wayward Pines. Because we had no TV experience. And then we had... We had one script that worked that we had written.
But I remember
we wrote a bunch of scripts, and then it was like we were really into Shyamalan when we were growing up, and then it was sort of like an old school Shyamalan movie. And then so Shyamalan read it at some point. Somehow it was submitted to him, and he read it and liked it because we were ripping him off. he likes his own work. He's like, I love this. I'm like, yeah, no shit, dude. we're trying to be you. And then so he then pulled us into that, and then that was really interesting.
Because we had this idea. Like, we had the idea for Stranger Things because we were figuring out what the next project could be. And we had the idea, and we're like, no one's going to let us do TV. We have no idea how it works at all. And then it was about a week later. It's just one of those fluke things that, you know, they said, you know, you want to get on the phone with M. Night. And so and that ended up – we were supposed to just consult for a few weeks, and then we ended up being on the show – through it was like over 6 months, 7 months. It was just what was supposed to be a 2-week job became a full time
job. And that
was
quite the cast, because it was like Matt Dillon, Melissa Leo, Terrence Howard. Yeah. I mean, for like,
you're being thrown,
we were
into
like,
the
that
deep
was
end.
Really the deep end in terms of working with these, because we were this, you know, it was we learned a lot doing that.
And I think
that show and how to work with actors.
And we came out of it and we're like, I think we know how to do this. We know.
I didn't feel like that at all. I just felt like it looked like maybe we could say that.
Well, people showed up. The thing is airing. It feels like we knew what
we
were doing.
Well, you have the proper credit. You know, it was like somehow we got, you know, muscled our way into getting an EP credit, which is kind of what you need. And then, and use that to convince people.
Usually you have to go up through various writers' rooms to get up to the level that we needed to, but somehow on that one, you know, what we realize is amazing in Hollywood is if you tell people no, if they're offering you something like money or a job and you say no, then they'll throw you more things. They go crazy.
Well, I think what happened was we were in the middle of shooting Wayward Pines. It was actually an really expensive show.
I'm sure it was.
And it was they didn't have – the actors were sort of rebelling, and they didn't have anyone whose script they were liking. And they liked – and Knight liked our stuff, so they had to have us, right? And we were able to use that to get us
– I mean, the pacing of that show was really interesting because it was opposite – you know, a lot of shows, like, you know, True Detective. And I thought True Detective was great.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I totally was super jazzed at the ending. I'm like, oh, it's just a dude. Like, I just thought it was going to be like this.
What ending could be satisfying after all that build up, though?
I don't know. No, you're totally right.
The journey was worth
some,
it.
It, yeah,
you know, I thought it was going to be at least supernatural or super science or something.
Yeah.
And then ultimately it was like, no, not really. It's just a dude. But, and you know, he has a little bit of a vision, but I don't know if that really means anything. But, you know, Wayward Pines. And I feel like when most shows or series like have the big idea, like this is the big idea, they fucking hold on to it as long as it's humanly possible. But yeah. Wayward Pine's like four episodes in or five episodes
That's
in.
That's what drew us to it because they sent us the first five. I couldn't believe that they gave the twist away at four. That was Chad Hodge, I think, the creator of that, who did that. I don't know if it was him and Blake Crouch who wrote the books.
But it was bold that they just...
Here it is. This is what this is. This is all this craziness. And then you're like, wait, what? What? You know? And then
it's bonkers. Yeah,
it is bonkers. But you didn't have anything to do with season two, I imagine. No, you were probably doing Stranger Things.
We were doing Stranger Things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, because season two, they were like, well, how do we?
I haven't seen it. Yet.
Where do we go from? Well, it's just dealing with the aftermath of everything you learn in season one. It's just they are. I'm motioning so you understand what this means. But people who haven't seen it yet, it's not spoiled, but it just takes place in a different time.
Yeah.
And they're just dealing with all the stuff. But by that point, did you, when you finished Wayward Pines, you had just decided, well, we were only going to work on this for one season anyway.
Yeah, we kept trying to go to do Stranger Things because we had the idea. And so we just got, Wayward Pines ended up taking a lot more time than possible. But the good thing about that is we had some money and we're like, now we can spend a few months develop this show. And it did take a while because it was really from summer and we didn't sell the show until February. So it was like 6-7 months of just us. A lot of it was us developing it on our own. Eventually we brought in Sean Levy and Dan Cohen and 21 Laps, but that was months into the process. We had the season arc, we had a lookbook, we had the first script, and so we had a lot of it figured out.
But that was that so Wayward Pines, provided us a platform to learn. Like, we learned how to do television, and then it also gave us the financial means to just like take off.
And more than that, we always months. Even Hidden, which was our first script, was it took us, you know, it's 100 pages and it took us 7 months or something to write. And then Wayward Pines, they're like, we're going to start shooting next week. You need to get us something. And the gun to our head was actually the best thing for us because we're, you know, a little obsessive compulsive and we get caught on things and we go in loops. And it was just, it forced you to let go of that and just go, okay, I'm just sort of vomiting this out. And you just start going. And that is the great thing about TV is that you can't overthink it. You have to just keep pushing forward, which for us, I think, was a very healthy thing because we can just get stuck in cycles for a very long time.
But it was
time.
Cool because you're like writing stuff and then like a week later you see dailies with Melissa Leo, you know, delivering those lines you wrote. And you're like, okay. And then you start to figure out really quickly what's working and not,
right.
What's translating and what's not translating. It's like, oof.
But I think it was funny because on season two, we had Andrew Stanton direct two episodes. And animation is even more extreme than movies in that it takes forever to see that come to life. Whereas this was quite the opposite for him, and he loved it just because you're producing something and you're immediately seeing the results of it. It's so fast.
Whether it works or not. I mean, you're seeing it. You know what I mean? And then you can't tinker with it, but much like animation, the process of it, the more I'm learning about it, it's still a very foreign process to me.
Well,
how animation works, but they just redo it over and over and over.
Well, they do, but also it's almost like the pre and post production processes are flipped where it's like you're doing a lot of pre stuff in animation.
Right.
That you would do in post for a regular if you're shooting live action, but also that idea of, you know, someone with an animation background. I mean, I'm an animation nut, and I think it's such an incredible, because it uses so many disciplines, and I think someone, you know, like Brad Bird or anyone who knows how to tell a story and weave all of those things together is probably a pretty good live action storyteller.
Absolutely, for sure. Because we found out Andrew was like, he called the producer Sean Levy and said, you know, he'd be like to direct a couple episodes.
I don't know.
Let me think about this. Back to you. We jumped at the chance. So it was amazing. So it was really cool. And he storyboards everything.
Oh,
so,
wow.
But we weren't really there when he was shooting. So most of what I learned about what Andrew did, I learned from talking to our actors. But, I mean, they're like little doodles almost. but it's like very precise.
What is the when you say you came up with a pitch for Stranger Things? I'm so curious to know what the show was initially in your head.
We had a pitch, but like we had a lookbook thing, and then we had a fake trailer.
It's
we
very
made.
Close to what it ended up being, except that originally it was just going to be one season, but it was the same. Eleven was going to sacrifice herself. It was mm-hmm. going to be sad, but they would save the world, and that was what it was going to be. Until we realized no one actually wants. Apparently, no one can make money off of these limited series.
Well, I mean, no, that's true. They can't.
Well, it was a fad. When Wayward Pines, it was a fad.
Right.
And then it sort of phased.
Because they realized and it makes sense. You put all this money and resources into building up this brand, and then if it's a success, you're like, never, we're not doing it again.
Yeah, which is why, you know, with True Detective, they're like, okay, well, let's just get another cast. Yeah. All right, let's just try that. Yeah. We'll just try that again. Please come back. Please, everyone, come back, please.
But it's hard. You have to build. You're building a whole new world again. Whereas they, you know, so that's. So anyways, that was the biggest change. And then other than that, I mean, I remember I looked back at the pitch in the document to see how close we were after season one had come out. And I think the biggest thing is that the kids and the personalities of the kids that we ended up casting changed the course of the season a little bit, and Winona changed it. And I think actually it's a little bit lighter than was originally intended. It was more R-rated when the first pilot script. And part of that was us just making sure everyone in the industry knew if they read this is not a kid's show.
Right.
And it's not intended for kids. So we had, you know, F-bombs, and we had – the violence was much more gruesome and extreme. But otherwise it's – we just went through that pilot script and just took out some language and just took some blood out, and that was it. Otherwise, it's very similar to what was.
It was so well, it was so well cast, and there are definitely shades of it with it,
yeah,
and Finn being in it yeah. too, who's great.
I know, he's amazing.
Just like super. You know, we went to the It premiere, and I was with some friends, and we chatted with him and some of the people who yeah. were in it. And I think what's great about that and Stranger Things is that there is a real authentic sense of the kids don't look like kid actors.
Right.
They just look like kids.
I know.
They looked like your friend group, and I played D&D before right. you were born. and so that was exactly when you're watching this going, oh my God, this is fucking exactly what it was. This yeah. is how kids talk. This is how they interact. This is how yeah. they reason with the world. This little sort of nerdy bunch of kids is how they they use this fantasy world to process. And what an amazing idea to say, oh, what if the fantasy world were at, what if it was actually a real campaign, was what I always wanted when I was a kid.
But that's why all those movies and the Stephen King stuff connected with us, because it was like you saw yourself, or like, I mean, obviously the classic is the Goonies, but it's like that, it felt so much like us and our friends, the way they were talking over each other. It's funny because Sean Astin was in this year, so I asked him a lot about the Goonies and stuff, and he's like, the first time he saw it, he didn't like it, because he was like, I can't understand what they were talking over each other constantly, and it drove him nuts. I know it drove that editor Michael Kahn nuts, because they were just it was chaotic, but that's how it was. I mean, that's how, because it's when we saw it when we were kids, we thought that's, we still do it now. We still talk over each other. You can notice.
Technically felt, twins.
We're allowed to, right?
Yeah.
But but it felt so real and so authentic. And then they go on this extraordinary adventure. And then it's like, you're part of that. You're pulled into it to such a degree. And so and Stephen King did the same thing. I mean, I didn't read, I saw the miniseries It before, because I saw that. Like a lot of kids, that traumatized. I feel like when people talk about the success of that movie, people forget how many kids saw that miniseries. Like, it was a huge event in my life
yeah.
growing up. Like, because I was like, I did a slumber party with like 20 of us, and it scarred me from like big time. It is funny though. I was introduced to Stephen King through movies and through TV, and then when I was younger. Like when I was in elementary school, and then I started reading him a little older when I was in middle school and high school.
Well, it's really, you know, like sci-fi and fantasy are hard, and horror is hard because, you know, when you look at your show, there are so many points where it could have not like any if there was any little joint that was out of place, if the creature design wasn't yeah. on tap, or if the sort of the gateway didn't look right or anything, yeah. then it just completely unravels
oh, yeah.
all of it.
Yes. No, and you're freaked on set. You're freaked out.
Well, because you have a guy with a rubber suit, and 90% of the time it looks terrible. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Like, it looks. There are dailies that are just embarrassing.
It is. It's simultaneous. It also is amazing though, because they're controlling this the Demogorgon's mouth. So it's like all the petals are controlled individually. It's super. It's all the stuff you dream about when you're a kid, having access to. But if it's done and filmed in the wrong way, it just looks. It's very. You feel very vulnerable in a way. And then you have, especially season one. You know, you have these actors like Winona and stuff, and David, and everyone's on edge a little bit because no one knows. There are days when no one knows if this is working or not. But eventually, at the end of the day, everyone sort of, we all, you know, you're in it together, and everyone sort of trusted the process. And then by the end of the season one, I think we all felt, you know, very connected to it in a way. But it was scary.
It is scary.
It's scary.
When you have a guy in a rubber suit, you have Winona talking to a ball of Christmas lights, and there's this, it's a fine line.
Shooting it.
And also, you know, there are edits. I mean, you can see it, and it doesn't work. You know, there's, you know, yeah. So it's scary. You know, it's tough. It was scary, but
I really hope you saved the rubber suit.
Oh, we.
As a person who collects, my wife and I collect, like, props and stuff. Oh, yeah. As someone who collects those things, you need to save that rubber suit. It's going to, I'm telling you.
It smells, though. I mean,
it doesn't matter. Pretty... Put it in a box. Let it smell in your garage, man. Someone's going to fucking pay like $100,000 for that someday. You need to hang on to that. That's a part of, I mean, it is a part of television history. And particularly, and I'm going to be really extra passionate about this, in an industry with a lot of CG, having a real thing that was in something is a commodity. It's rare. It's like it's not that common anymore.
No, and not many people can even do it. It's like a skill. It's like a skill that's being lost.
Yeah,
I mean, in models is another one. That's just
shot a model yet.
Yeah.
And that
well,
seems
we've
like
looked
that
into it.
Fun.
It's apparently ridiculously expensive, especially now, just because so few people can actually do this. It's.
I mean, Chris Nolan shot with models. I think didn't he for Interstellar?
Yeah, he's got a couple $100 million.
It helps if you have that kind of money. To shoot with models, we'll talk to Netflix.
Yeah,
sure. At this point, you should throw your weight around.
It's hard though because then you know the funny thing is shooting season one. It's like we did fall in love with. I understand why these filmmakers fell in love with CG though because it can do exactly what you want it to do.
Yes, I know, but we're still not quite there yet. I mean, like,
no,
I think
know.
The perfect is a balance of practical with a little bit of with a little CG sheen to just like smooth out the edges or just add a little bit, you know, like a little bit of animation.
Well,
or
I just watched Alien Covenant. and yeah, that's exactly what you don't want.
Yeah, it was full CG.
Yeah, it destroys it.
It's hard to, because you can't, you don't watch it and you go, you never watch full CG and go, wow, that's amazing. You go, oh, that's all right for CG, you know?
Yeah.
We're just not, and there are amazing CG artists out there. I'm not shitting on it as a craft, but it just, the technology just isn't quite there yet. I mean, even Avatar, there's a little bit of forgiveness in Avatar. And that's like the best CG ever. So,
but they're doing. I mean, the Planet of the Apes movies, like they're doing some amazing.
They really are.
That,
doing,
I mean,
yeah.
That is some incredible. I mean, occasionally you see something, you just go, I can't tell if that's what that how they achieved that and that. So it is. It's getting.
I think
better
they just trained some apes to talk. They just.
They've gotten fur now. They've like nailed.
Fur.
Yeah, but it was interesting. We have more CG this year, and it is interesting. I mean, it is sort of in a lot of ways, it is like, and that was one of the things we were like, oh, we want to learn more about visual effects. And it is sort of like practical effects in that it can be really good or really bad depending on how you shoot it. So you actually have to shoot it and edit it right. So, I mean, I think I'm mostly really happy with how it turned out. I mean, some of it. You know, we're learning, but you have to shoot it right.
But also, you know, it must be very exciting, but also terrifying that, you know, when you make something, when you make the first of something, you don't exactly know what's going to work. You just have all these ideas and then stuff works. And I'm sure there are some things that you go, oh, okay, I guess this worked. We thought it would be this, but it's this other thing. And then season two.
Right.
And you're like, shit, how much? Because I feel like audiences... They want two different things simultaneously. It's like, be different, but the same, you know? Don't be too same different, but be different the same, you know? It's like, so how do you know?
No, we were just talking about
that. Because we were just reading these reviews, and it is hard that is the line that is really hard to hit. And we're even talking about – we just today we started talking season three, and it's like how – if you're too different, people feel jarred and
right.
they feel taken out of it. And if you're too similar, they go, we don't – you know, and I'm the last person. I don't want Home Alone 2.
Right.
It's right. Like you don't want that. And obviously Cameron is the best, and he's almost doing like he's taking the same thing and he's changing the genre just a little bit.
Right.
And I think that he's the master of it, but otherwise it's difficult.
Well, I want to see what he does. He's got like four more sequels.
Yeah.
You know,
see if he is truly the master. Although I don't know why anyone at this point
you
would
can't
doubt
bet
him.
Against him. You
why
can't,
would you doubt him?
Can't bet against
I'm not going to doubt
James Cameron.
No, it's, you know, yeah. He takes two swings and he hits them out of the park. He's two for two.
But both
Titanic
times, everyone was
Avatar.
Like, this is going to be a monumental disaster.
This is going to be ruined. Yeah. Oh, he's lost his fucking mind.
And so then, Avatar 2 doesn't sound particularly exciting to me, but on the other hand, I'm going to assume it's going to be pretty something special.
I mean, it's going to be amazing, but even if it's...
He waits so long, too, that he's able then to do something incredible with technology that we're not even aware of right now.
That's the genius of him. I mean,
you wait 10 years.
He pushes that. he combines, you know, very classic, simple storytelling. Like, people knock Avatar, but I like, you know, for the story. But I think that's why it became as big as it is, because it's very basic, simple storytelling combined with cutting edge.
Well, in a fucking effects. Like in a, you know, in a like a Justice League world, where I was like, wait, yeah. Who's this? What are they? How are they? Okay, so what's everyone trying to do? You know, it's like
it gets very muddled.
It
yeah.
gets very muddled when you're trying to keep track of like nine storylines. So yeah, I think
I like
people
the simplicity
do appreciate
of it.
The simplicity. Of
I like
a,
the
a
simplicity
very simple story.
Of it. Yeah, I like the simplicity of it combined with these incredible effects. I think it's cool, but I don't know what he's going to for that seems. But maybe I don't know. I'm really interested to see. Yeah.
Well, now you have those studios that are just announcing like, hey, there's a thing you don't exactly know what it is yet, but we're going to make six of them. You're like, well, just make one good, and then we'll see if there should be six of those.
That's right. Exactly. That's a mistake. I mean, you know, it's like Lucas makes Star Wars, he has some dreams of what it could be, but really he just made one good movie.
Yeah.
And they've built an entire multi-billion-dollar franchise off of that one good movie. But you need that really good base, or it's not going
to
work.
And you also need to be able to inspire other really creative people to come in, you know, like for Empire to come back and go, what if we did this, you know? And like really bring it's almost like the first season is almost or the first movie in a franchise, successful franchise, is almost like a beacon that calls all the other, you know, Andrew Stantons of the world to come out and go, hey, wait a minute. I think I could provide something.
Can I play in this sandbox?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So in a way, you're just, you know, it's almost like you're sending out the flare and all these creative people are coming to try to, you know, bring what they have to it.
Exactly.
Is Stranger Things about friendship, or is it a sci-fi, or is it an adventure? Like, what do you think it is? Like, what is? I'm so curious
all
to know what
above,
you think it is.
All of the above. I mean, that's what that is why I'm kind of like falling in love with TV. You know what you can do with it, with like these long when you're basically doing a movie, but you have anywhere from 8 to 10 hours or whatever to tell it, and that you get to explore so many different things. Like, because the canvas is so big, so that's why it's hard for me to even be excited about. Even though we grew up not really watching TV and only watching movies, but it's hard to
And yet you're not making a movie.
I know, but that's everything's changing. You know,
do you want to make a movie or do you not want to make like a 90
minute? No, I don't really have an interest in it anymore. I mean, thinking about it, but I mean, what appeals to me about movies is that you can like build this perfect 2-hour structure and you get all these incredible resources in terms of like you get so much more money.
Right.
But I like that. I like these long form stories, and I think that that what Netflix is doing and what some of these companies are doing is more exciting right now than what the traditional studio system is.
Regardless of what it is, I think what's exciting now is that when this is very new, which is that you can come up with an idea and you can go how. It's like if you're writing a novel. A novelist isn't like I have to write 120 pages. They come up with a story and they go, how long is this story? And it could be 6 hours, it could be 20 hours, it could be, and then you know places like Netflix and now there are a lot of other places too offer a home for those stories. So you don't have to get. You used to have to be boxed in on for network television. You have to do this many a year, and you have to have, you know, you have to have a commercial. It's very specific. A commercial break. every so-and-so minutes, and it's very precise.
Even
and,
Wayward Pines was that. We had to build
And
like
same with feature
breaks.
Films. I mean, you can't really – I mean, yes, of course, occasionally there's like a three-hour movie that pushes it, but generally they're all around the same length. And so now it's exciting to me that there's you have storytelling possibilities.
I just – I was reading some interview with Fincher, you know, he's talking about – I guess it was a Mindhunter thing. And he was saying that he doesn't feel like – in the studio system, he's like, you have to stay in their lane, and it can be fun. But if you want to do anything with any sort of character work in it, you can't be working
like
the studio system.
If two people sitting in a car for 5 minutes talking, if that's revealing interesting things about their characters, that's great. But you don't have time for that in a two-hour movie. You even a Fincher movie, you don't have time for it. So, but I love Mindhunter. I love that you get to spend time with these characters and see how they evolve over, you know, 8 hours. It's fantastic.
But yeah, to me, it's like when and I started to really notice it with True Detective, which is when you start to, you know, you have a shorter, you know, season for TV, and then you have really cinematic directors coming in, and to me it started to elevate this medium.
It is nice because I don't think any movie in the theater needs to be 3 hours long. I just don't think.
Yeah.
Because you sit through a three-hour movie, you're like, you could have cut out like 35 minutes of that, you know?
Yeah.
It didn't need to be that long. And it really, television, and especially cable, and especially, you know, video on demand, which Netflix is,
yeah,
really was smart enough to say, like, hey, look, our medium's a little different, but we're going to allow you the creative freedom to really explore and that
right.
and it was really smart
because
all the people who felt confined by other platforms and other big studio systems were like, great, I'll just go make my weird thing over there, and guess what, there's an audience for like your weird thing.
Oh, you're exactly right. That is how they drew talent. You're right. I didn't think about that. But that's because for a while it was like, why would you want anything on Netflix?
I mean,
there's nothing appealing.
It was not that long ago that Netflix was just
five
the red
years
envelope
ago.
That
oh, yeah.
came that you would, oh, I could just drop this DVD in the mail and I don't have to go to the store.
So, but that's how they, it's interesting because that's how they developed, they realized about that binging was something that was going to work because they started to notice that the turnover rate on television shows was much, much greater. People were turning them over much faster than they were movies.
Right.
And movies would sit, you know how when you would do Netflix, I would have these movies sit out. They would get so dusty. You know what I mean? Especially that they would say, they call them like the well-intentioned ones.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like Schindler's List. They'll
right.
just sit there for
yeah.
2 years.
Right. I'm going to watch
this. Because no one can work.
This weekend, we're going to watch
We're going to watch
promise.
It. And then, I'm just not.
A stressful
not,
day.
Yeah,
oh,
not,
I just got Firefly. Yeah. Let's just watch that.
But exactly. The shows, like the Breaking Bad or whatever, they were turning over rapidly. And so, I mean, I remember I had the three DVD deal or whatever it was, and I figured out a way to do it where I could get it instantaneously.
Okay.
Like, if I was watching a season, I could finish one, turn it over. By the time I started, finish the next two discs, then another one would
and you
be
had it in the mail.
In the mail. It would be a perfect cycle.
Do
so.
They even send? They must still send DVDs.
Oh, yeah,
they
I don't DVDs? Do it, but
I haven't,
do.
I haven't either. I haven't thought about it in ages.
No.
I just forgot. I just complete. This technology moves so fast.
But there was a time when they saw this and not everyone did, including me, and they made that shift and they're like, now our DVD service is called something different, and I was
right.
so upset. Because I was not ready.
It was too fast. That's the thing about something different. It was too. They tried to change. You remember that? It was like a whole like crisis
oh,
at Netflix.
Fucking
it was
lost
like,
their minds.
Yeah, yeah. What was it called? Like Quick Flicks or something.
Yeah, something.
Like
something. People were not.
It was like
enthused.
The one like small misstep that they made, and they quickly corrected it. But it was like because they knew what the future was before anyone else did.
But also sometimes though, when people flip out about something, if you're confident enough in what you're doing, you just go, just give them a minute.
Yes.
It's
oh, yeah.
Just it's just this little hump they need to get over emotionally because no one likes to change their habits.
No.
And then after a bit, then people just
whenever
this
a website
so bad,
changes,
I guess.
Right? Whenever like a like the design changes, everyone
right.
always loses their shit.
Where they change this font? Like it's exactly the same. You don't. Nothing has changed. This is not. This is Helvetica, and it was Ariel Blackmon.
Yeah.
Like you fucking. It's the same thing.
It takes them like 2 days though, and then they're over it.
Then they're
over every
it,
time
they're...
Facebook makes a change, it's like the world is ending. And,
but it,
and...
but that's all the time though, isn't it? It's just like I feel like they're just changing all the time. Like, well, your news feed's this now, and here's this, and this moved over here, and now this is over there, and it's still impossible to delete this ever.
Exactly.
You're never getting away from this ever. Have you talked to other? Have you thought about other platforms for storytelling? Is anything else exciting to you, or you're pretty locked in?
Well, we're I guess we, you know, we kind of, you know, we talked about and we made the decision that we wanted to see this show through just because we're so intimately involved in every aspect of it. And so it feels like, oh, we should just finish telling this story.
5 seasons, 8 seasons, 10
oh,
seasons.
Oh, my God. No. Is it, no. We always said 4 to 5, you know, is kind of our.
I think we'll know more because we're starting season 3. We'll know if this is the, you know, penultimate or there'll be a couple more after it. And then. So we'll figure it out sooner rather than later because I do think we know where we're going. We just don't know how long it's going to take to get there. But I do think you run the risk of straining credibility a bit with this story and these characters.
Right.
The minute I don't believe that they're still in this town and dealing with this, I mean, how often can you go? It's like, oh, it's another year. This weird thing's happening again.
Well,
could it be something supernatural?
Well,
that's the danger that it gets. So you just have to figure out a way to make sure the story stays. I believe these characters.
That's why it's hard. Like that's why it's hard for like Buffy season 7. You're like, well, they've already. You're like, well, they just live above hell. All right, you know, it's like they just because you have to up the stakes every season, and it always has to be like. The worst thing they've ever, you know, it's you just level up like a video game.
Exactly.
So it's like, it's just boss battle. At some point, it's like, they're fighting God, you know, it's like, how do you get any, like, what
exactly.
do you, they're battling the universe. Yeah.
But like something like Game of Thrones, I mean, they can sustain that for much longer, even though they are going to end it.
But that has, a definite goal of like,
does.
Someone's going to get thrown, and like, it's just, how do you get there?
But they have so many worlds, I mean, basically different parts of the world. That they can explore, whereas, you know, we have one small town.
It is like Star Wars in a way, Game of Thrones, in that they have now, you know, Westeros, they have an entire universe and they can explore any time.
Yeah, they can, but I'm telling you, I still think that the way Game of Thrones should end is that Tyrion Lannister like walks out and gets on the subway at Westworld and then you just find out it was all a robot simulation.
Just don't give HBO ideas. They're going to want to do that.
No, they won't, because if they did, a lot of like the Game of Thrones fan, it would be an apocalypse. Like the Game of Thrones would light the world on fire, the fandom of Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
If they were just like, oh yeah, these are all robots. People are like, what the? I mean, you think people get mad about fonts? Like, imagine what happened.
Man, that's a
when
pretty
you start
good
fucking
idea.
With
that
their
is,
fans.
Like, that's kind of blowing my mind.
Isn't that? Wouldn't that be great? There's no reason. Westworld, Westeros, it's our fucking right there. Come on, guys. Come on, HBO.
We have a small version of that, which is that I think, like, in Predator, as fans have brought up, there's, like, the guy that they go, Arnold and stuff, goes searching for is named Hopper. And he's like,
Jim.
It's Jim Hopper. And he's, like, all skinned and killed by the Predator. So that's our version of that. That Stranger Things is just one elaborate, very elaborate Predator prequel.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That at the end of the show, Hopper's just someone's, because I believe he's hunting monsters now, right? So the government's like, hey, you need to go to the jungle to deal with this alien thing, and he gets killed, and that's it.
But you know, that ties you also into the Alien universe, too.
Great. Let's do it. Let's call Fox up.
You've now.
We can help their alien franchise.
AVPVD, the Demogorgon, is like then they all just got to fight each other.
That's it. There we go. Anyways, that's where we're headed. That's for sure. Things it's gonna be. Yeah.
Well, that's where it is. It's like, you know, the sequel's like, okay, we got to take it to a nut. So it's like, just like you said, Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
Exactly.
Then next would have been Europe.
Yeah.
Then you got to go to space. And then I don't know where you go after space.
Space is always the last. Isn't Call of Duty going to space now?
I think
they're
so.
Running. Yeah. That means you've really run out of ideas.
There's nothing. There's no other place on Earth we can possibly go.
That's right.
We no other to time to. Space. No other war to
no,
explore. We're out
no.
of it. No other war with guns. We've got to go to space.
Was there anything in the show that you really wanted to do that just either wasn't achievable because of technology or just like story wise? You were like, oh, I love this idea, but you know, we just sometimes just got to cut shit out.
Hmm.
Well, season one, there definitely was more just because we had a more limited schedule. And so we just weren't. And that's what we fought for season two, is just to include you know, include all those little ideas that maybe you wouldn't have time for to explore those little nooks and crannies.
Yeah, we like Lucas infiltrating the government lab and all this fun stuff. And then, you know, the line producer looks at the schedule and goes, "You're out of your minds." You know, but we were, you know, we were able to do a lot, you know, and then, you know, and then some things like the bike chase and stuff that we weren't able to. Some sacrifices you make where you're just not able to shoot that. A lot of that was almost entirely second unit.
And so this season we just try to make sure that for that stuff we were there. I mean, so that when looking back on season one or whatever, those were sort of the stuff that we went, we wouldn't have cut that scene and we wouldn't have done this.
But more season one, it was actually figuring out structural, you know, how do you structure something with this, you know, this eight hour storyline. And so, you know, when something's that long, you're going to make a lot of, you know, a lot of mistakes. So you're trying to, you know, with season two to rectify those,
but you have
as much as possible, and then you make new mistakes.
But you're new and innovative but mistakes.
Yeah.
But your show has a very special thing, which not a lot of binge watch shows have, which is because, you know, having been front row for Walking Dead for so long, it's like, oh yeah, it's all parsed out. People have to take the journey, so they talk about it for months and months and months.
Yeah.
As it's happening, but then you binge watch something, you're like, and then you don't talk about it again. Stranger Things just happened to be one of those things that people memed and talked about, and that's not very common binge watching, but it must have been really interesting to be able to see, like, right away, like, oh wow, there's a real outcry for Barb. You know what I mean?
Oh,
it's like,
yeah, it was
to
cool.
See you, which in your mind was like, okay, well, this is just a thing that happened to a character, but the audience gets to tell you immediately. This is what we're paying attention to.
Oh, yeah. It was really wild. I mean, yeah, people – because it takes forever to make this. I mean, you know, it took us a year and a half both times, right, about?
Yeah.
And so – and then yeah, people have finished it in a night. And they have – and they have strong opinions about it. And but that's the other – it, you know, it makes it they really then also want the turnaround faster because you know this is something, a show that would be spread out on a traditional network over a couple months.
Would you have preferred
at least,
that?
Which would buy you time. No, but it would buy us more time. I think we need to start conditioning people to wait longer for television seasons, because that's the only frustrating thing I found about television that I want to change. And I've seen some other showrunners and stuff, you know, talk about it and complain about it. It's like now there's this expectation for, you know, really movie quality work in terms of, you know, especially in terms of the technical aspects of it and in terms of the visual effects and all of that. But everyone wants it turned around. Even the networks, Netflix, HBO, they want it turned around on a traditional television schedule.
Right.
So they want it within a year, which is just impossible.
You want to get it back to Cameron time.
I want to get – no, but people wait a couple, two and a half years for sequels. And the only reason we can't do that is because of – well, Netflix would kill us, and also our kids are – you know, our kids are growing up. So that kind of puts a little bit, put of a little gun to our head, and that we can't take but so long. But even the Harry Potters, were they a year or between? No, they were over a year between those releases.
It was a little, I don't know if it was quite yearly.
It wasn't on an annual cycle until the last two where they shot them back to back.
Right.
That was the only way they got it on an annual cycle. So we have in season two, we have the same number of effects. I mean, over the course of like 9 hours that a big budget, you know, visual effects movie would have, but spread out over 9 hours. But we have maybe like one sixth of the time post-production schedule.
But that's just, I mean, that's also technology. Like, everyone expects, you know, we consumers now just expect, like, I want it right away.
Yeah.
And you better fucking revolutionize, but not be too revolutionary.
Yeah.
And I want it to be familiar, but revolutionary.
Yes.
And I need it, and I want it now, and I want to just sit here, and then I want you just to scoop it into my mouth. You know,
exactly. It's like, as fast as possible.
Like, I want my dragons in Game of Thrones, but now, especially having done more visual effects in season two, like, when I watched the new season, I'm like, my lord, that took a lot of time to do that. It just takes a lot of time, and it's great and it's fun, but it's not something that can happen overnight.
Well, those battle sequences, because I'll watch and I'll go, oh my god, how did they do this? And then I watch all the, you know, behind the scenes stuff, and then I go, oh yeah, it's just incredibly difficult, which makes me feel better, but also, like, you know, it starts raising the bar for, you know, what's expected out of TV. And I love that. I love that when you start to marry these big budget movie style visual effects sequences with really strong character work. Like, that to me is like really exciting. That's one reason I like TV, because if you're going to do, because I love all the visual, the big budget spectacle stuff, mm-hmm. but then you don't end up, you're not invested at all in usually in any of the characters because they don't take the time anymore. But what's cool is like the idea of taking some of that, some of these amazing tools that they've developed, and then and applying them to these TV shows like Game of Thrones did, so that you're, these characters are in this incredible, visually spectacular battle, but you're very invested in everybody who's in that battle. Like when I, you know, when I saw Battle of the Bastards, I was like, oh wow, this is like next level stuff. And so that's why I'm so excited about like basically big budget TV. That's to me the cool thing right now.
What would you guys have done? If you, because it feels like you're still pretty young, and it still feels like, oh, your TV career just came out of the, you know, just shot out of a cannon,
all right.
And everything happened really fast. It might not feel that way to you, but
it, no.
But what do you
No. Yeah, no, because it was like 8 years of like failure, pretty much.
But what are you like failing at in that 8 years? Like, what do you think you're failing at?
We had our first break, which was a. I mean, first it took a while to get something going. Then we had a first big break, which is a movie at Warner Brothers, that script that we had written. And we were like, oh, we've made it, you know. And then they just ended up, and you spend 2 years on it, and then they just dumped it. And so that was hard because you went from feeling like, oh, we're doing exactly what we're supposed to be doing, exactly what we wanted to be, or exactly where we wanted to be. And then they just bury it.
That sucks.
You can rent it on Amazon now. No one knows it exists, mm-hmm. really. So that was really hard because you put as much time and effort into that as we did. Stranger Things is called Hidden.
Oh,
appropriate. Exactly. As much into Stranger Things, into that as Stranger Things, except nobody seemed to really care or like it that much. So it is good to fail because... then, you know, when you do have a success, you know, I mean, we definitely know what the other side of that feels like. I don't know. It was funny. That was fun because we were at Warner Brothers, and this was a while ago. It was like Guillermo del Toro was next door to us editing Pacific Rim.
Oh, wow.
And so we got to know Guillermo a little bit, and he's like the funniest guy. But he was kind of like... helped us out of our depression.
Oh,
he was like,
nice.
Don't worry, you guys. Like, he's like, nobody's going to turn the faucet off.
I think that is the greatest fear, more than like, oh, this story didn't connect with people like I wanted to. I mean, it's a bummer, but it's more of that fear, especially when you're starting off of, you just don't want that faucet to get turned off. And
well,
that's
you want people to
thing.
Continue to allow you to
tell you stories.
Make stuff, because it's a real privilege, you know, because this stuff just costs so much money. And so, especially when you're starting out, you definitely don't want your first thing to not work. And that's kind of what happened with us. So it took us after that. It was about that, and then led to Wayward Pines. And then
we
dug ourselves out of this.
Well,
huge
and I
hole.
Think that it's only we were only able to because we may have been able to have a career as writers, but we were only able to dig ourselves out of the directing hole just because there was a sudden in very clear need, and we saw this, which is one reason we moved to TV. There was a need for content in the television space, a very desperate need for it. And so we were just there. We just raised our hands, and we're like, "We'll help. We'll help fill that."
Well, yeah, we took advantage of that. I mean, so you know, I mean, and so I mean, that's yeah. These Netflix and these companies were expanding really, really rapidly, and there wasn't enough stuff.
And I remember feeling we thought there was no chance in hell Netflix would ever do would ever do this show, because at the time it was like, you know, I remember going, you know, they have Fincher and they have Jinji Cohen. These are very established people. They didn't have a lot like they do now. And then what we realized is after they bought our show, we felt very special, but we were just the beginning of what was just a massive buy-in and all this content.
What was it? Yeah, it was like – that was like Netflix phase one. I'm making this up, but it feels like – it's not like they talked to me about any of this, but I feel like Netflix phase one was like, let's like really put some money, like put our chips on and spend a lot of money on very talented, established people like
right.
Jinji Cohen and David Fincher, and they knocked it out of the park for them. And then phase two was, okay, let's start taking, you know, some riskier bets.
Right.
And so like we were one
then
of those.
It's not even a huge risk for them. Worst case scenario is they have more content on their site for our consumers. Like it's not – It wasn't. It was a bit of a risk, but not to the extent of a studio film where you're having. And this is where we run into a problem with our first film. You spend $10 million on it, and that's not that's piddly. That's nothing to somewhere like Warner Brothers. You spend $40 million to release it and put it out. Then you start talking that's real money for them.
Right.
And then if that doesn't do well, that affects stock prices, whatever. It's really about putting the money to the marketing spin for these movies. And that's for a small movie release. The marketing spin for these movies is so massive that you have to make so much money back.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's so what scary. And it's sad, but Soderbergh just tried to change it with Logan Lucky, because he's the marketing spends for these movies are ridiculous.
And that's what's holding back those mid-range movies, adult films. They're not getting made as, $40-50 million movies, because then you got to spend another $50 million to market, and suddenly you have to make blockbuster type money.
Well, also, unfortunately, the other side of it is that it's just too – there are too many reasons for people to leave their house.
I know. Well, that's the other problem.
Because of Netflix.
Yeah. It's weird.
You're like, I'll just – well, there are some things where you go, I want to see that in a theater. I should see Avatar in a theater. And other stuff, you're like, that drama about the family with the kid that runs away, I could probably watch that at home. I don't know if I need to see that on a big screen.
It's true. It's true. And then there's stuff like Blade Runner, which is like you should see this on a big screen, and then people still don't go to see it. So I don't know. It's a little depressing.
But with Stranger Things, you don't even – I don't know. Maybe they tell you in private, but Netflix doesn't really ever tell anyone who's watching what, how many people
they
are watching what.
Don't, it is true that they swear in my life, they don't tell us anything about the viewer.
How do you know? Was there any point where you go, I think this is a hit show, but I don't know?
No, you just start. You can only really go off of social media, which I don't even know how trustworthy that is. And you just start to get a sense of how that's what you start to see it ripple across pop culture. It's like you see Amy Schumer make a joke about it and people laugh, and you're like, okay, well, they got the joke. So,
or if you get an Emmy or something, you probably know. Or
that's nice industry recognition. It definitely was not intended as an award show. I can tell you that. Netflix was not expecting that. So you start to feel it out, and you're like, okay, I think, we went to Comic-Con, and it was sort of it is surprising. It's such a small group of people that are making the show and reacting to the show, and I think that maybe is one of the nice things. You don't have a lot of people's fingerprints on it. I mean, so it's like we deal with three executives at Netflix, and then there are higher-up executives, and you never hear from them. Very rarely. I mean, they're involved in a different way, and so it's a very. And then we have two producers, so in total it's five people outside of us and our writers who are involved in sort of the big decisions. And I think that there's something really that feels very intimate about it. And I think that and for the most part we're left alone. And that is one of the nice things about TV, though, I think, because movies cost so much money and they're so short that, you can have a studio's fingerprints over every line and every page.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't have – even if they wanted to, Netflix, which they don't, but even if they wanted to, they'd be unable to because we have too much it's too much content. We're turning out the scripts, they would tell you, too late, which is true. But we finish everything. It takes us a while, It's probably it's like 3 weeks of script. There's not a lot of time, which is a little scary. There's very little safety net. So if we bomb on a script, it's kind of, it is what it is. But, because everyone has to move so fast, there's no time to sort of overthink or overanalyze. You have to go. And I like that about it. And then when they do have a note when they do have notes, obviously, they're usually very, very smart.
Well, I wonder, because when we're talking about films or traditional television, it's like they bring a lot of market research in before and go, okay, we got to do this and we got to make this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it seems like, Netflix, if a place like Netflix will go, well, the shows are the research. It's like we just make them. And then we just see what people are responding to as opposed to trying to come in with all this pre-programmed.
I hadn't thought about it, but that's true. That's very true. And then they do research. In terms of the thumbnails or the image you see for each show, they see who's clicking on which image. But you're right. They do that all after the show's been released. There's no testing. There was never any testing of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And so, and that's something.
God,
that
you're
is
so lucky
in a studio
because you don't know they could have like you know they could have gone to a mall like in Nebraska and just pulled like 40 random people in a mall, none of whom could have given a shit about any of the themes or anything. We're like, oh, well, this is not. It turns out no one cares about this. We're like, well, the 40 people you asked that you pulled out of, you know, Hot Topic or whatever. Actually, if you pull them out of Hot Topic, they probably would have liked it. But anyway, whatever else. By, you know, whatever it is.
Well, my problem, I mean, we've been involved a little bit with studio testing, but you get, you know, the executives or studios, they can kind of read what they want out, get out of that testing and force you to do things you don't want to do.
And it's that classic thing, you know, when you're in school where you're like, you know, the teacher asks a question and one person raises, you know, their hand. About,
right.
Do you like this? And then everyone else raises their hand. It's like they just follow the leader.
Right.
So it's a little – it's like, who doesn't like this character? And then one person raises their hand and then suddenly the whole row does. Well, and it's like, you liked him.
Not only that,
you're
but it's like
him.
You know, someone just was standing in a food court for 45 minutes because they couldn't decide if they wanted a hot dog on a stick or Orange Julius. And then all of a sudden someone puts them down in front of a show and says – I want your criticism. Well, educated corn dog consumer, you know, it's like all of a sudden they become the most knowledgeable because they just are like, oh, someone's asking me my opinion.
Exactly.
I'm going to find problems with this because they're asking me to find problems with it.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
It's just such a backwards, fucked up way to, you know, and I feel like so many times in the industry when creators are empowered to carry out their vision in a mostly unsullied way, it's like it fucking works, you know. But then the takeaway is going to be, oh, I guess America just wants to see a bunch of kids playing a board game. We're like, no, they just wanted that story. It's like, they don't need to see kids playing a game with a dimensional demon.
Yeah.
Like they just need good stories that are, you know, well thought out and authentic.
Yeah.
That is
I'm sure they'll learn all the wrong lessons. It's like, you know, when like Deadpool became a big thing, it was like, oh, well, we just, you know, it's the R-rated superhero now. And it's like, no, it's actually because this is a very personal, unique take on on this. Or same with Logan. I don't know. They tried to figure it out.
Well, they're taking the wrong. You're taking the wrong lessons from it. It was like that was a passion project for those people, and it shows. And that's the end of the story. And I think that's what it is. It's not because people wanted an R-rated superhero movie. If you make a bad R-rated superhero movie, it's going to do poorly.
Right.
I mean, it's nothing to do with the rating.
It's like having it's almost like you have Lieutenant Commander Data on the bridge, and the play happens, and he tells you all the things about the play that about why it must have worked. And it's like, okay, those are all the sort of artificial, I guess, superficial reasons that of connection points that you might be able to piece together. But you know, there's just still that sort of that soul quality to it that you can't put in a cell on a spreadsheet. You know, that it's just harder to go, let's just hire creative people. Like, okay, well, who are they? Find them. You know,
they want to make it scientific because there's so much money on the line,
right?
So they want to figure out.
They're like, well, the research said,
right? We did everything right, you're supposed to. But I agree. No, but Netflix, that is their philosophy. At least as it was told to me, is that they find people who they believe in and they take a bet on. They bet on them, which is sort of what the studio system did in the 70s when they were like, oh, they realized that's when that resulted in some of the best movies, you know, in Hollywood history, which is like, we don't know what people want, so we're just going to trust.
Are you guys
trust these filmmakers?
Are you just going to focus on this, or is there going to be like a Duffer Brothers umbrella corporation that's
going to
start
so.
Putting out a lot of other Duffer Brothers-esque?
To the frustration of many, we're like very, we're unable to focus on anything but this.
I think it's the idea of producing, finding people that you're passionate about and helping them get something.
That is right. You
is a
do
nice
that.
One. I think that's a nice idea. The only thing we're struggling with is just Stranger Things. We're directing, in the case of season 2 and probably season 3, you're directing 4 hours on top of writing 8 to 9 hours of content on top of editing that stuff and getting it produced and released as close to a year as you can. And you know, it just becomes all-consuming. So, and we don't want to shortchange it. And we don't want to shortchange something else.
We're trying to find efficiencies, but I think the efficiencies are just going to provide us, like, weekends, potentially.
Right.
Like, it's not like going to open up this whole other avenue for us to develop
other
stuff.
I think we could, if we didn't do the directing is just that, but that's our passion. That's what we love. We're only writing in
that's
order
the reward.
That's the reward. We're only writing, and we've only ever written to just get to the point where we can be directing. So that's the thing we don't want to
give up. And how do
you
work together?
I think well, we make all of our decisions, I think, in the writing stage. So that's when we fight, and then and then we write in a way that we both know what that means for the shots and stuff. Usually, and then so usually, then when you get on set, it just becomes about executing.
Yeah, no, but there, then, you must have like there must be familiar, consistent fights that you've had since you were toddlers.
Oh,
that manifest themselves in
I'm sure.
much more academic
oh, I'm
ways
trying to think.
When you're like
I don't know.
Scripts are on a
yeah,
set.
We probably should like be seeing a therapist because we have such a close you know working relationship.
But don't you have some sort of weird twin meld?
Oh yeah,
isn't
yeah
that-
yeah we have a really close twin meld. I mean even like when we were really little, we started telling stories like make believe stuff like all kids do. When we were really, really young, I mean, like preschool, and so I can't remember a time when we weren't telling stories together. But I think I'm trying to figure like what is our common, you know, common fight. I don't know. So, I would say that because it's so it gets so complicated. I mean, obviously, when you're writing a script, you want it to at the end of the day to seem as simple as possible, and so and oftentimes it's just way too complicated and it's kind of a mess. So. Usually somebody is wrong about something because it's so, you know, and then we get in a fight about that.
Yeah.
And then someone, and I don't know who's wrong. No one's going to admit someone's wrong more than the other. I would say it. So I'm going to be political and say it's 50-50.
That's a safe answer.
But no, I would say, you know, I don't know. Ross is.
What are you saying? You're going to get in trouble.
I'm going to get in trouble. Well, I was going to say, yeah, Ross, he's always been a bit more focused on the writing. Aspect of it. I'm a little better, more focused in post. Can you agree on that?
It's a little more complicated, I would say.
Okay, Ross is hearing you, but I just feel like he's not.
This is why we need to go see somebody.
Co-signing the agreement that you're laying out before him. So what we're going to do is this was a really good session, and we're going to meet again next week. I don't normally take on new clients, especially two at a time who are twins, but. But I really believe that you guys are going to work this out. I really feel like it's going to work out.
It's really sad when you hear about brotherships or twinships or where that fall. Like the Hughes brothers had a big falling out.
Yeah, sure.
And that's that pains me. It hurts me.
I don't know if they had a falling out. We just know that they don't work together anymore.
I bet they had a falling out.
Wachowski's right. They don't work together anymore.
Oh, they don't?
No, I don't think they. I don't know. That's complicated. I'm not sure that that's a falling out that they had. But it hurt. It's hard for me to imagine doing it. Flying solo, I guess. That would be a disaster.
Well, it's not anything you have to worry about any time in the near future.
I don't think so.
Well, because you're moving so fast, I mean, everybody, it's important to be aware that everybody is capable of having really terrible ideas. And so we block those really bad ideas. So Ross provides a really nice safe. We provide nice safety nets for each other.
I know, but it's what's so scary, especially on a show like this, which can really be about anything.
Yeah,
it's you know how do you weed out when you get so close to something? Sometimes it's really hard to tell.
Well,
I'm too close to this. Is this bad or is this good or am I?
Yeah,
I don't have the right.
Well, but that's why the other day, like I now, even if we did a movie, I would bring a room, a writer's room, because like. Of like four other super nerds and like really smart people and they help a lot. And so before this I was like, I don't need a room. I don't understand the point of this. I mean, Wayward Pines, there was no room. And so, but now I've fallen in love with it because we think so much alike and we've seen all the same exact movies and our life experiences are very, very similar. So it's really great to have other people in the room with slightly even if they love a lot of the same stuff that we love, they have different life experience and different point of views, and they really help get us out of so many ruts.
Were you D&D guys?
No, weirdly, no. I mean, we did play some Dungeons and Dragons growing up. We were more into Magic the Gathering.
Got it.
Was our, but you know, that was not around in '83. So,
no.
But we did play D&D. We just weren't. Huge deal.
I'm glad
guys.
Like board games I feel like are having like a bit of a resurgence in the past
absolutely.
Like 10 years. But,
yeah,
but
absolutely.
Even late, like people who I never would thought would be playing board games will play board games. I can get to play board games now.
Yeah, I mean it's you know, we were running so fast at you know, having played D&D from the beginning, we were running so fast toward video games of like, oh the video games are
yeah.
gonna
yeah, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
then at a certain point Like, you know, it was really nice to sit in front of other human beings.
Yes. Well,
and
I don't
have
get
a
the,
shared.
To me,
experience.
I don't get the. I love video games. I do not get the online video game experience. Like, because I love, like, when I even played like GoldenEye or whatever. Like, the best experiences I had playing games were when I had other people with me in the room.
Yeah,
and that's the same reason I love board games, because you got people. You know, I don't want to talk to someone on an intercom or a walkie or whatever, someone who lives in, you know, Oklahoma. I want to play with my friends in the room. And I think that's why board games are like coming back in such a big way. So it'd be really cool to have. I know they put like out a Stranger Things Monopoly thing, but I really think it'd be cool to have a proper board game.
Fantastic. I feel like it's time for a Stranger Things board game.
I know. I just play. I played this game, Defenders of the Realm, from the 80s, which is like very D&D-like. Have you heard of that?
No.
It's really cool. But I was like, that would be a good... It's cooperative-based. Because I'm kind of into these like cooperative-based games now. Like, have you played Pandemic?
No, but I've heard about it.
But you got
to
do
Pandemic. But these games I have to be very careful of.
Why?
Because they'll fucking eat my life.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, Pandemic is, to me, revolutionary, because it's like a game that you play over the, like, well, I didn't play it over, but you're supposed to play it like over the course of the year. And the every time you play, it changes the board. However the game work, like, turns out for you, it like scars the board. You tear up cards. You put stickers on the board that fundamentally change the game for the next time. So it's like it is constantly evolving, which is really cool. But then I played the game Defenders of the Realm, and I was like, and I realized how much like Stranger Things took from a lot of stuff before it, how much Pandemic had taken from this Defenders of the Realm game, which is very D&D-like, but you're working with other people to defeat these monsters. It's really cool. But I mean, there's so many great games. It's like a whole other world I've discovered.
Well, are they actually playing D&D in Stranger Things, or is it actually
D&D? It actually is D&D, yeah.
Got it. Okay, that's cool.
It is, yeah. And D&D, they've been really cool. There's been no rights issues.
No, they've been great.
Well, I'm sure they probably don't mind at all. That
I guess not. I haven't heard.
Hey, we're really upset. We really didn't want that many people to remember. But,
I think Eggos was more surprised than anybody else.
Did you see my Halloween costume from last year?
Uh-uh.
Oh. I was
an echo?
No. I'll have to pull it up and show it to you, cuz I don't want, if I tell you what it is,
okay,
then it's better that it's, maybe it's worse that you see it, but it's I'll show it to you when we're done with the podcast. But the picture was taken right out here, just to give you some context,
yeah,
for this, but while I'll set the scene, and then I'll show you the picture. But so when is it? I know the premiere is Thursday. Does it drop on Netflix Friday?
I guess it's midnight. Yeah,
right.
It's midnight. So yeah.
Although you should clear midnight Pacific time.
That's so, right. So it'd be 3 a.m. for people on the East Coast,
which sucks if you're on the East Coast, but it is what it is.
But if you're an insomniac, good for you.
Yeah, exactly.
You got something to do at 3 a.m.
That's right. No, but I mean, I remember even season one just being shocked at, I remember waking up Friday morning and just seeing the people finish the show, which was, it just blew my mind.
Before it was anything.
Yeah, no one knew anything about it, and it was amazing that people had already finished it.
But that is kind of funny that you said that. You're sort of like, yeah, spend a lot of time on that.
Spend a lot of time, and they're done.
Yeah,
they're like, done. But you know what? That's what a movie is the same way. I mean, like, it's like, you know, you spend 2 years. You know, you make a Star Wars movie. That's 2 years of your life.
No, that's
you've
true.
Got no
at
week.
Least.
No, at least you got
probably
no
three.
Weekends. You're gonna. You almost die when you're at the end of it. Probably. I'm just imagining how Rian Johnson is feeling right now. But it's like, and then people watch it in one sitting.
And then it's all. And then it's just all
but
done.
Millions and millions. At least when you make a Star Wars movie, you're not worried about whether or not people are gonna watch it.
No.
You know, a lot of people spend 2 years on something and not no one will watch it.
But there was a time when they were making Star Wars movies, they were like, well, I don't know, you know, before Force Awakens came out, they didn't know, you know, they didn't know
they
people
didn't
were
know they knew they spent $4 billion acquiring they had an idea. That seems like a deal to me, doesn't it?
I mean,
$4 billion,
it really does, especially because Instagram cost $1 billion, so you're like,
right,
so Star Wars is only worth 4 Instagrams?
Like, I don't know. I mean, think about the merchandise alone.
No, but it's not just Star Wars. They also have Indiana Jones. Oh,
oh
that's
my
amazing.
God. That is incredible.
I found the picture.
That is incredible.
You really used a lot of powers. There's a lot of blood.
Yeah, there's a lot of blood.
Blood.
I've used...
it's like
I've
the double...
exhausted
the double
a lot of my powers. I went on a bender the night before. Power bender. And yeah, I got all hopped up on Eggos.
Awesome.
Yeah, this was my costume on At Midnight last year.
That's incredible.
Oh, wow.
But I was 11, for anyone who's listening. It's on Twitter. It's on Instagram. You can find it. Are you guys going to celebrate Halloween in any particular fun way?
No.
No, because I never dress up, which is, I guess people consider it lame, but I was like, I'm like too self-conscious. So I always just watch at least, you know, a couple scary movies. Great scary movies. I'll find people who haven't seen something and make them watch it.
And show it to them.
Yeah.
I'm having some friends over tonight who have never seen Christine, so we're going to show them Christine.
I haven't done Christine in a while.
It's fun.
To hold up?
That's a good movie. A lot of people haven't seen Christine.
I mean, if someone liked Stranger Things, seeing, like, you see the seeds of that style of filmmaking in Christine. Like, Christine is, like, super 80s.
Yeah.
And Keith Gordon is a director. Now, yeah. The guy who, you know, who plays the lead character is a director now.
Oh,
but the seeds of it, just that. What is that vibe? Do you have any idea what that aesthetic and that vibe is? I don't know how to describe it, but it's just so 80s. I mean, like, literally everything about it. I guess it's just because it was like the dawn of synthesized music and the digital. Like, it was just the technology was just starting to fold in.
I guess. I don't know what it is, but it was, you know, we grew up with it.
But it's a mix of, that's what it is. It's a mix of analog and then, you know, with the digital, it's with that synthesizer sound is just, I don't know.
It's the best.
It's the best. It's my favorite thing.
I mean, you should release a whole Stranger Things album at this point.
And it works on anything, because when we did like a mock trailer to sell the show in the first place to Netflix, like we had E.T. and stuff in there, but we had like John Carpenter, classic John Carpenter music over it. Works over E.T., just makes it a little scarier. It works
It's everyone knows it's easy to turn E.T. into a horror movie.
It is.
It scarred a lot. I mean, it messed it. I didn't like actually watching E.T. much as a kid because it really disturbed me. I mean, all the stuff when he's dying and Elliot's dying.
It is a lot. And the people in the suits and he's just this little fucking turkey, like, in a, you know, in a freezer. It's sad.
It's sad and just upsetting.
And also, you know, like, single mom, like, fucked up family.
Yeah. It's dark.
It's dark and a bummer. And then somehow at the end, you're like, he's going home. You know, like, somehow at the end.
That music, man.
It is the music.
But then I read, I didn't know this fact about E.T., was that there was a scene, a coda, after the spaceship takes off, where they're playing D&D again. They're playing D&D like they were at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, shit.
At the very end. And then the camera moves up and it finds like a little like antenna, like he's still potentially communicating with E.T. And they cut it because you can't, the power of that ending on his face with it.
When
you
they
know,
just
on
cut
Elliot's
out
face.
On that
no,
every
when you
time
cut out, no, but it is.
I mean, in Goosebumps thing, you meant
I know, but it's a very bold, if you think about it, it is a very bold, non traditional ending. It just really cuts out at the highest. Usually a movie will kind of let you down.
But that's just
and
like,
that just it ends at the highest emotional peak.
There's a coda where Nick Fury shows up and he's like, "All right, we gotta go get that guy."
Right now, that would be at the end of the credits.
Well, that
of E.T.
That's the worst. But that's like that's almost. I mean, it was fun for a while, the coda. But the problem is, it's like usually you wait, you have to pee like halfway through a movie.
Yeah.
Like, well, now I'm going into the third act, so I feel like I can't miss anything. And you're like, how much of the fucking credits do I have to? I really have to pee.
They do like four different things now in the credit. It's crazy. I'm like, is it that the last one? Is
and
there another
is,
one?
This is happening as credits are getting longer and longer.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like more and more visual effects
artists
are working
on it. But
it
gets people to sit through the credits, which is a new thing.
Listen, I respect it. I just need
to... Netflix won't let you sit through any credits.
No, it's true.
You have to make an effort to watch the credits. That annoys me, actually.
Well, I roll Twilight Zone at night, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm trying to fall asleep, we'll roll Twilight Zone. And it jumps past the credits, and I'm like, no, I want the opening credits because I need that song. That's part of the...
I want the credits.
I want the
opening titles, and I want the credits because I want to... That, I think, is important. It lets you have time to kind of like...
Maybe that's an option. Is that an option? Can you talk to someone at Netflix? People want to see this all the time. Can you talk to someone?
You're right.
No, I can't.
It should be a deep cut option. So if you actually do care about
it... I thought you have to hit a button, though.
I thought you have to hit skip
the
intro
main title.
To skip the main title. You have to hit the skip intro. It won't automatically do it anymore.
You're saying on Twilight Zone,
it automatically skips the intro.
When you're watching, rolling episodes, it just like
I talked 15 seconds in.
Maybe it's new.
Something's wrong with mine because Mindhunter doesn't even giving me the option to skip the intro.
It doesn't mutt for me either.
What is that?
I don't know.
Did David Fincher pull some strings?
I'm gonna have David to Fincher might have
see.
Some
this
strings.
Is what happens. Someone like David Fincher does that, then they have people like us whining.
Let's
about
get Ted Sarandos on the phone. We're gonna tell him some of our
concerns.
What's going on? Probably not doing.
Why do I have a skip titles? You don't like my titles, Ted?
Ted, I want to hear the fucking Twilight Zone theme.
Yeah.
But I didn't know. We did purposely keep it. I was like, I want to keep it 45 seconds because I felt like that. When these title sequences do hit a minute and a half or, God forbid, longer,
right.
I do really want to skip if you're watching multiple in a row.
Just for fun. Just for fun. Are you still shooting? Oh, you're already done.
Yeah.
But just for fun, maybe in season three, just shoot the extended 80s sitcom version of the Stranger Things opening where it tells the whole story in the intro. It just gives you the whole, well, they were playing games down in the bay. You know, it's like it gives you the whole, like, Friday night, you know.
We need ABC. Ideas. I mean, this is good. I'll take this back into the writer's room.
I'm so pleased I was able to help. Thank you for being here. It was really great to meet you guys. Man. Congratulations on the show. I'm so excited for it to come back and come back for season three.
All right.
Oh, no, love to.
We'd love to.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.